Hello, I'm Jeremy Zelliger, Case Administrator at FINRA Dispute Resolution. Welcome, and thank you for listening to this neutral workshop. I'm pleased to introduce our speakers. Our first speaker is Linda Feinberg, President of FINRA Dispute Resolution. Linda will discuss the optional all-public panel rules, which have been in effect for just over 2 years. She will also discuss steps that FINRA Dispute Resolution has taken to open the forum to disputes involving investment advisors. We will then hear from Todd Saltzman, the Deputy Director of Case Administration for FINRA Dispute Resolution. Todd will cover FINRA's efforts to reduce the appointment of extended list arbitrators. Our final speaker is Margo Hassan, Assistant Chief Counsel for FINRA Dispute Resolution. Margo will discuss recent changes to the rules governing subpoenas and orders. And now, I would like to introduce our first speaker, Linda Feinberg.
Thank you, Jeremy, and welcome to the first of our 2013 neutral workshops. Just over 2 years ago, the SEC approved a rule change that allows all investors who file arbitration claims with FINRA the option of having an all-public panel. The rule became effective on February 1, 2011. The rule only applies to cases involving investors, and the rule gives investors the option of choosing an arbitration panel that has two public and one non-public arbitrator, or of choosing to have their case heard by an all-public panel. FINRA believes that this change better serves the interests of investors by greatly increasing investor choice in the FINRA arbitration program. Now, how does this rule work? Under the rule, FINRA provides customers with the option to choose between two panel selection methods before FINRA sends the names of arbitrators to the parties for list selection. One option, known as the majority public panel option, continues to provide for a panel of one chair qualified public arbitrator, one public arbitrator, and one non-public arbitrator. The second option, known as the all public panel option, allows parties to select either a panel consisting only of public arbitrators or a panel consisting of two public and one non-public arbitrator, as with the majority public panel option. The choice of the panel selection method resides with the customer. If the customer declines to make an affirmative election in writing within 35 days from service of the statement of claim, the composition rules for the majority public panel option apply. Some of you have expressed concern that FINRA is appointing fewer non-public arbitrators as a result of the new rule. However, there are still many opportunities for non-public arbitrators to serve. First, the optional all-public panel rule applies only to investor cases. The rule does not apply to industry cases, which make up a growing portion of our caseload. For example, in 2011, industry cases constituted 35% of our caseload. And in 2012, they constituted 40% of our caseload. Second, the data show that a substantial number of investors choose to have their cases decided by two public and one non-public arbitrator, rather than by an all-public panel. 24% of investors are proceeding under the majority public panel rule, and 33% of investors who choose the all-public panel option have chosen to have a non-public arbitrator on their panel. As you know, we post on our website the results of all arbitration awards and indicate which have been decided by majority public panels and which by all public panels. As of December 31, 2012, there have been 120 contested awards issued by majority public panels and 112 issued by all public panels under the new rule. The award outcomes so far show that all public panels awarded damages to investors more often than did majority public panels. In total, Investors have prevailed 50% of the time in cases decided by all public panels and 31% of the time in cases decided by majority public panels. Given the limited data, we believe it is premature to draw any final conclusions about award results. Because these results are different from those in the pilot, we analyzed the awards to see what factors might explain the discrepancy. Our review of these awards indicates that lawyers with more experience in the forum generally choose all public panels. We found that the attorneys who select an all-public panel have about twice the experience on average in the FINRA forum as do attorneys who proceed with the majority public panel. And for our review, we defined experience as the number of times the attorney has appeared in the forum as reflected in our caseload activity database. Turning now to investment advisor disputes, we have received inquiries from lawyers who represent investors and also from those who represent investment advisors who are not also FINRA members about the availability of FINRA's forum to resolve their disputes. Such disputes are typically resolved in court or in non-FINRA arbitration forums. On November 1, 2012, we began accepting non-member investment advisors' disputes when all parties agree on a post-dispute basis to arbitrate the dispute at FINRA. The investment advisor or other parties agree to pay the arbitration surcharge fees, and the investor and the advisor file a special written submission agreement to submit the dispute to FINRA arbitration. We will also accept industry disputes between non-member investment advisors and their employees on a voluntary case-by-case basis if the parties meet these conditions. The special submission agreement requires the parties to acknowledge that, first, FINRA cannot enforce awards against non-member investment advisors and their employees, since FINRA is not a self-regulatory organization for investment advisors. But second, FINRA may deny that investment advisor the use of the forum in future cases for failure to pay any award, settlement agreement, or FINRA fees. Third, FINRA and its arbitrators and mediators will be held harmless from liability arising in connection with the resolution of the party's dispute. And last, that the final award will be made publicly available on FINRA's awards online web facility. As of this date, we are using our existing roster of arbitrators and mediators to resolve these cases. Since almost all investor cases against broker-dealers allege breaches of fiduciary duty, we believe our roster is well-suited to decide these matters involving investment advisors.
Thank you, Linda. Our next speaker, Todd Saltzman, will discuss FINRA's efforts to reduce the appointment of extended list arbitrators.
Thanks, Jeremy. As you know, FINRA works hard to ensure that parties have opportunities to review potential arbitrators' credentials and to strike and rank arbitrators. Sometimes, however, we need to assign arbitrators whose names are generated randomly by our computer system. We do this when there are no available arbitrators left on the party's ranking sheets. We call this extending the list. However, over the years, attorneys who practice in the forum have complained about extended list arbitrators. That is, the appointment of arbitrators selected by computer rather than the parties.
So what has FINRA done to address those complaints?
Well, in 2007, FINRA implemented the new codes of arbitration procedure. The new codes refine the arbitrator selection process. In contrast to the old code, which allowed parties to strike each and every arbitrator on the list, the new codes limited to four the number of strikes each separately represented party could exercise. This change helped to reduce significantly the number of times staff appointed arbitrators through the list extension process. And then in 2010, we made another change. We increased from 8 to 10 the number of proposed arbitrators available for review when parties choose arbitration panels from lists generated randomly by our computer system. In expanding the number of arbitrators on each list, along with limited strikes, again, significantly increased the likelihood that the arbitrators would be chosen by the parties and not by computer.
So FINRA also introduced a shortlist option to reduce the random assignment of arbitrators. Can you please talk about that?
Sure. In another effort to further increase the parties' input into selecting replacement arbitrators, FINRA now allows parties to agree to review what we call a shortlist of potential arbitrators to find a replacement, rather than accept an extended list appointment once hearing dates have been scheduled. Now, FINRA will first attempt to replace the arbitrator by reviewing the list that the parties previously returned. FINRA then invites any arbitrators previously ranked by the parties to serve. However, where no ranked arbitrators remain from the party's initial list, or no remaining arbitrators are able to serve, parties may stipulate to use of the shortlist method to select a replacement arbitrator. Now, an important point is that the shortlist option is only available if all parties agree to use it. It's a voluntary program. Now, if there's an agreement, FINRA will use its computer to generate a shortlist of three potential arbitrators for the parties to review. FINRA staff will screen the three potential arbitrators to ensure that they are free of conflicts of interest and that they are available on all scheduled hearing dates. FINRA will send the shortlist to the parties along with copies of each prospective arbitrator's disclosure report. Now, here's how it works. Each side may strike one name from the list, and they may rank the two remaining arbitrators in order of preference. FINRA staff will then combine each side's list to find the highest-ranked replacement arbitrator. Now, one twist to this is that if you have a situation where a hearing is scheduled within 5 days of an arbitrator's withdrawal from a panel, the parties can only use the shortlist to select a replacement arbitrator if they agree to postpone a hearing. We require parties to request a postponement under these circumstances to allow enough time, one, for FINRA staff to create a shortlist, and two, for parties to rank and strike the potential arbitrators.
So what have the results been so far?
Well, so far, parties in almost 60% of qualifying cases have used the shortlist option to select a replacement arbitrator, and those are very good results for a voluntary pilot. Now, after the pilot period ends, we're going to consider whether we should propose a formal rule to codify and extend these procedures.
Todd, what does the shortlist option mean to arbitrators?
Good question. So, as an arbitrator, you may receive a phone call from FINRA staff asking you to add your name to a shortlist as a potential arbitrator. Now, staff will review the case with you to make sure you have no conflicts with the parties, counsel, or subject matter of the dispute. Staff will also check with you to make sure that you are available on all scheduled hearing dates. Now, once FINRA consolidates the parties' list, only one of the prospective arbitrators will receive a second phone call with an invitation to accept the case. And of course, we're also going to call the remaining two arbitrators as soon as possible to let them know that they were not selected. So the key takeaway here as an arbitrator is, if you're on a short list, it's important that you keep the prospective hearing dates open until you hear back from us, which will be just a few days typically.
Todd, thanks so much. And now we're going to end with a discussion of changes to the subpoena and order rules. Margo, would you please explain these new amendments?
I'd be happy to. The Codes of Arbitration Procedure authorize arbitrators to compel the production of documents by 1. Issuing subpoenas to parties and non-parties using the subpoena rules, or 2. Issuing orders of production to FINRA member firms and their employees and associated persons using the order rules. We're making 3 changes to the subpoena and order rules. First, we specify that arbitrators should issue orders, as opposed to subpoenas, when industry parties seek documents or witnesses from non-party firms and their employees and associated persons. Second, we address a disparity between how the cost of non-party firm production is determined under the existing subpoena and order rules when requests are made by industry parties. And third, we codify our existing procedures that allow a non-party to object to an order or subpoena. Okay, change number 1 specifies when arbitrators should issue orders as opposed to subpoenas. In December of 2012, the SEC approved amendments to the subpoena rules, which direct arbitrators, in most instances, to issue orders instead of issuing subpoenas. when industry parties seek the appearance of witnesses or the production of documents from non-party firms or their employees or associated persons. FINRA believes that firms and associated persons are better served by requesting an arbitrator order. While the codes provide an enforcement mechanism for both subpoenas and arbitrator orders, typically, once an arbitrator issues a subpoena, noncompliance is handled away from the arbitration forum through the courts. Arbitrator orders are more cost-effective because forum users avoid the costs and risks associated with court proceedings. These changes only apply to requests for documents by industry parties directed towards non-party firms or their employees or associated persons. These changes do not apply to requests for documents by investors. Investors are free to request documents by subpoena or order.
So when would it be appropriate for an arbitrator to issue a subpoena rather than an order to a non-party firm?
An arbitrator might issue a subpoena if, for example, a firm failed to produce documents pursuant to an arbitrator order, or if a former associated person of a firm has left the industry and the arbitrator believes that an order would not be effective. Now, in terms of change number two, we're addressing a disparity between how the cost of non-party firm production is determined under the subpoena rules and the order rules. The subpoena rules in effect before this change did not address who bears the costs relating to production by non-party firms and their employees or associated persons, but the order rules did. Under the order rules, the party requesting the appearance of witnesses by or the production of documents from non-parties pays the reasonable costs of the appearance or production. FINRA believes that a party firm's responsibility to reimburse a non-party firm or its employees or associated persons for production costs should be the same, regardless of whether the party firm requests a subpoena or an arbitrator order. These changes correct that and ensure that an industry party that requests a subpoena will pay the reasonable appearance and/or production costs related to the non-party firm's compliance with the subpoena, unless the panel directs otherwise. And a key point here is that these changes only apply to industry parties. None of these changes affect investors. The third change relates to objections by non-parties to subpoenas and orders, and by parties to orders. The amendments codify our existing procedures which allow non-parties to object to an order or subpoena they receive, and which allow parties to object to orders. Under these provisions, if a non-party receiving an order or a subpoena objects to the scope or propriety of the order or the subpoena, the non-party may, within 10 calendar days of service of the order or subpoena, file written objections with FINRA. The party that requested the order or subpoena may respond to the objections within 10 calendar days of receipt of the objections. If a party receiving a draft order objects to the scope or propriety of the order, the party may, within 10 calendar days of service of the order, file written objections with FINRA. The amendments are effective on February 18th for all industry party motions filed on or after the effective date that request a subpoena or an arbitrator order. For more information, you can download Regulatory Notice 13-04 from our website at www.finra.org.
This is Linda again. I want to say that this concludes our neutral workshop for today. Thank you for taking the time to listen. We very much appreciate your excellent service at FINRA as arbitrators and mediators. We look forward to your continued service on our roster. That concludes our workshop. Thank you and goodbye.